Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Welcome back to Faith and Family, Dr. Michelle Critella. It's good to have a chance to talk with you today and learn more about what's going on with the American College of Pediatricians today.
Oh, thank you so much, Andy. It's always a pleasure to be here on your program.
Tell us I know that the college has a statement on pornography and children. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Any other news from the American College of Pediatricians today?
We're happy to report that we are growing. And we're increasingly being able to work with like-minded organizations, including a national pro-life organization of obstetrician and gynecologists. Mm-hmm. In fact, we will be having a joint medical education conference in Houston, Texas, in February that we're very excited about. So we're hoping that this bodes well for an increasing number of pro-life pediatricians and other primary care physicians.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our good professional news. And we have also been able to increase our outreach to parents and families through our blogs, because we have hired some marriage and family graduate students in marriage and family counseling who are blogging on a variety of common mm-hmm. topics and issues of interest to mothers and fathers. So we're happy.
I've noticed the increase of posts on there recently. So, well, thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for spreading the word.
Glad to do it. Well, today the topic we're addressing is pornography and children, the effects that pornography has on children, and I know the college has released a statement about that. Before we went on the air, you were explaining how sometimes when a statement is released, it's very structured and very specific language, kind of technical language. Today we'll talk about that statement, but I'll also talk about it in layman's terms as well. And I appreciate that you always do a fine job of helping us work through these issues as parents and grandparents and care providers would want to understand.
Right, exactly. I mean, if people are, obviously it's a public statement, so anyone could go to our website and look at it. So our specific position statements often have a number of statistics, which a mother and father may not find very practical or useful, mm-hmm. but a graduate student or policymaker may need. So certainly on programs like this, I want to make it, really just break it down and get to the bottom line and make it very usable to families.
Well, what are some of the key things that parents or care providers, educators need to know about pornography and its effects on children?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing we all need to realize, because even myself as a parent, one of the first things that really surprised me was how pervasive pornography is first among adults, even Christian adults. In some surveys, over half to 70% of even Christian men are involved or addicted to pornography, depending on where those surveys, you know, are taken, the different populations. So I think as parents and educators and adults in general, we have to realize that first we have to take an inventory of our own lives. And if we need help, if we have this problem and addiction to pornography, we need to get ourselves help first if we want to hope to impact our children in the right way. The reason the college decided that we really need to get a statement out on the issue of pornography in children is because we're seeing these same elevated percentages, up to 70% of teen boys surveyed think there's no problem with pornography, that it's a fine thing to view and engage in. And nearly 50% of girls in some surveys are finding the same opinion. And the problems, pornography becomes addictive just as drugs, alcohol, and smoking. So we need to get that word out to our young people so that they're aware that this is not a harmless thing.
What is some of the harm that is brought about by pornography? How does pornography, let's talk about boys. We'll talk about girls as well.
Sure.
Particularly
yeah.
boys, you know, when are we seeing, at what age are we seeing boys first exposed to pornography?
That's really a good question, because this is another, can be shocking, but even as young as 10. And the primary reason is technology. Now, especially with smartphones being given to elementary school students, you know, porn sites are just a click away. And it's most frequently in the young kids, most frequently happening by accident, that they're coming upon these. And whether accidental exposure or, you know, an older sibling or older friend leading them to the sites on purpose, it can be quite shocking to these young children. Confusion, anxiety, and depression are all mental side effects of being exposed to pornography that young. And even in teenagers who think it's no big deal, when these, particularly the boys, when they are evaluated, yes, they have depression and anxiety related to their porn usage. And just like being addicted to drugs and alcohol, porn use is associated with poor performance in school as well. We have to start thinking about pornography the same way we do drugs and alcohol when it comes to kids.
What about girls and exposure to pornography?
Sure. With the girls, I think the biggest harm there is to their self-image and self-esteem, because they're taking the pornography in, and it's giving a horrible message, the message that girls are valued only for their bodies and only for how well they can sexually satisfy men. This notion that a relationship is healthy even when it involves verbal abuse, physical abuse, or sexual abuse, because all of these things are contained in within the porn. It's a very dangerous message for girls to absorb, and it's equally dangerous for the boys to have. We're setting them up for horrible relationships.
How does pornography distort a young person's view of self-worth and sexuality?
Right. Well, and I think this is the same for the boys as the girls. It's reducing sexuality purely to a physical pleasure, to a taking, versus, you know, particularly from, and I say this whether it's a Christian audience or a secular audience, sexual intercourse is supposed to be a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly from the Christian worldview, your sexuality is the gift of your entire self. And even a secular or audience can understand that. It's not just skin to skin. You are opening your emotional life, your mental, your physical. It's everything. It's all of you. And this is supposed to be something beautiful. That message is not there within pornography at all. So it gives a very abusive portrayal of sexuality, which is dangerous for boys as well as girls. I don't know if you'd like. I can share some of the survey results in terms of how boys who are invested in pornography, how they view girls.
Sure. Well, as best we can do without.
Right.
Sure.
But essentially, we do know that boys, meaning teen boys, as well as older men, so they kind of follow the same pattern, they are far more likely to be accepting of sexual promiscuity, mm-hmm. of non-consensual sex. So again, the abuse, the acceptance of abuse and violence within relationships, they find that less problematic than, say, men who are not involved in porn. So this is not just a theoretical concern. It actually happens. You know, having a steady diet of pornography that degrades sexuality in that way desensitizes mm-hmm. boys and men, and they start to act it out in their relationships.
So regular, as you said, regular use of pornography then shapes their worldview, their understanding of what sexuality is, and even what healthy sexuality is.
That's right.
And their self-worth, the worth of others, and in doing so really devalues both people and the gift as well.
Right. And then when this goes forward, should they eventually, they value... boys and men who have been using porn also, when surveyed, value marriage less. Mm-hmm. And when they do get married, are also less committed to that relationship. And there's certainly plenty of studies that have demonstrated pornography is a cause for divorce between couples.
Let's talk about addiction and how this becomes an addiction. You mentioned earlier that this can become an addiction, much like an addiction to drugs or alcohol.
Yes. Anytime we experience a new experience or something exciting, mm-hmm. pleasurable, there is a release of neurochemicals mm-hmm. in the brain to reinforce that. And the same neurochemicals released when, let's say, a person is drinking alcohol or high on drugs, that same chemical, those same neurochemicals are released with exposure to porn. Excuse me. So at the physiological and the biological level, there are changes going on in the person's brain, which makes it very, very difficult to break the habit, which is why within our position statement and on our website, we do list a number of different groups that can help individuals and families mm-hmm. who struggle with this problem. Certainly, we want prevention, and so there's a number of filters and so forth that parents can use to decrease the risk of any inappropriate material coming through their computers. So prevention and treatment are key. It's we tend to look at it as a moral problem, and it certainly is, but we have to be careful to realize, okay, this is also a biological and psychological phenomenon going on, and so we have to look at all avenues of help, the spiritual, the spiritual and the medical avenues of help.
Sure, it affects the whole person.
Correct.
In numerous ways. And so what I'm hearing you say is that it not only affects in one aspect of life, but in several aspects of
yeah.
life, which then shapes relationships, family, and then ultimately society as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
What can parents do then if they if they suspect that a child has been exposed to pornography, or if they suspect that their adolescent, their teen, or maybe heaven help us, even younger, may have an addiction to pornography?
Right. The key is in terms of any issue going through a child's lifespan, is to hopefully the parents have made open communication. Something as simple, and I think we talked about this in a previous program, something as simple as the family table. If you as parents and children are in regular communication, sharing these daily events, and also have consistently been acknowledging your child's feelings as they grow up, when you notice something odd, like, oh, Joe's spending an awful lot more time, he's withdrawn, he's kind of spending hours alone with his iPad or computer, and something doesn't feel quite right to you,
mm-hmm.
then you want to be careful. Obviously, you don't want to go up in an accusatory way, but you can express concern. You know, gee, Joe, Dad and I have noticed some changes in you, XYZ. Is everything okay? Can we talk? So I think you want to start with open-ended questions and then see how your child responds, and then you can actually bring up something, specific. What have you been doing on your computer? Pornography is all over the place now. Lots of kids see it and use it. Is this something that you've come across, that you've been doing? So as much as possible, parents may be able to broach it on their own in that fashion. If parents feel uncomfortable or they try that route first and it doesn't go so well, by all means, you can give your child's pediatrician a call,
mm-hmm.
and it may be a topic that could first be broached together with the pediatrician and the parent in the room together. Prevention is always the best way. So starting early and young and trying to, particularly as Christians, promoting the virtues of modesty and chastity throughout the life, throughout their growth and development, it's going to make talking about these issues easier as they come up.
Sure. And We've talked on here on Faith and Family before about placing technology in the hands of children. It's
right.
The culture that we live in, the world that we live in, mm-hmm. it's just simply a fact that the children are always mm-hmm. going to be exposed to technology and access to the internet, whether it's at home or in the future, as even in their career down the road, they're probably going to be using technology,
right.
Even if they don't have access to it at home. But so many schools use technology today that it's just a part of our culture. It's embedded in our culture and society today. It's something that we're going to be using, I'm sure, for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. We do at the college. Or if I have a parent talking with me, mm-hmm. I will encourage them. It's true, you can't keep them away from all technology.
Sure.
But do what you can to control what happens in your own home.
Right.
and certainly by, I also cannot emphasize enough how important it is to know their friends and to know the parents of their friends and to have open conversations with the friend's parents, and you can get an idea of what goes on, in their home too. I frequently, as much as I can, have my kids invite their friends over to our place,
mm-hmm.
and they hang out here, and they, have some good, clean fun. you...
And your house is the cool house to hang out
in. And that's where you try and... Yeah, you try. I mean, I find parent networking is huge. It doesn't take a lot. It can take just two or three, and we share. We will rotate a pizza night mm-hmm. so that no one family bears the cost or the burden of cooking or whatnot. But simple things like that to keep your children engaged with like-minded friends, and it keeps you engaged with your kids too. It's probably the most important factor. The parent-child connectedness across mm-hmm. the board is the most important factor when you're talking about any sort of social or psychological problems that kids can encounter today.
And so we're not going to avoid technology, but we are going to be proactive about how it's used in our home and knowledgeable right. of how it's used in our, you know, our children's friends' homes and our friends' yes. homes and yes. And, yes. and other family members' homes as well.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, even something as simple as this is something my wife and I have become sensitive to is what's playing on TV, because, you know, many homes you go into today in North America, the TV's playing in the background. We treat TV almost like we have treated radio in the past, and that is, you know, we have it going in the background passively. We're not necessarily listening to it intently, but it's always running in the background. There's always something playing in the background, or maybe we're watching it, but we're also doing, you know, five other things at the same time.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And what's on that TV, though, is the question. What programs are broadcasting or throughout our home on that TV, or throughout you know, the grandma and grandpa's house, or, you know, aunt and uncle's house, or friend's home, or the neighbor's home, and what's going on in the background? With a 2-year-old, we've been a lot more mindful of what kind of programs that might be okay for a 12-year-old to yeah. watch as parents have conversations with them and can understand those things and deal with them appropriately, but some right. things might be a little too scary for a 2-year-old.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, our recommendations, we encourage families early on, I don't talk about it at the prenatal visit, but
sure.
but once the baby has arrived, I do talk to parents about mm-hmm. Trying to keep that switch over to the radio, but keeping that TV off except for selected programs.
Sure.
And preferably just to keep TV and computer screens away from kids, certainly before the age of two. And they'll say, well, what about baby Einstein? And I'll say, you know what? Never been proven to help kids. Babies, especially, they need people contact. They need to gaze into the eyes of their moms and dads. They need human interaction. Screens cannot, there's no age, mm-hmm. absolutely no age or developmental stage in which a screen can replace human contact.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. And that brings us back to the very topic of you know, pornography and its effect on children as well, and how it shapes and distorts our views. Well, certainly an important topic. I want to point our listeners to your website as well, bestforchildren.org. That's the American College of Pediatricians website. They can find more information, helpful resources there as well. Dr. Cretella, always great to have time to talk with you about these important topics, and I appreciate the statements that the college releases, and I certainly appreciate your time sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you for this opportunity. You know, our goal at the college is to strengthen families, first and foremost, strengthen families, and in that way, we're going to improve society.
Well, thanks so much for your time today.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.